Welcome to the Touring Car America Podcast. This is where touring car racing comes to life. You'll get in-depth interviews with drivers, series officials, auto manufacturer reps, and unique personalities through SRO, America's Touring Car Division. This is the Touring Car America Podcast, and this is Joe Jordan.
This is the TC America Podcast 10 Questions, and I'm here with the TC America alumni, Will Rogers. Will, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it should be fun. Well, here we go. Question number one. What was the first car you ever owned?
First car I ever owned. It was a 1992 Ford F-150 single cab that my grandparents kind of gave to me. And I quickly flipped it for some cash, and I'm sure I used a lot of that cash to go back to racing or something like that. But that was the first car I ever owned.
So you're always wheeling and dealing. Some things have never changed. Trying to come up with a way to make it all work. I like it. Question number two. What did you want to be when you were growing up? So when you were a young kid, what did you want to be?
Well, every young kid, they think they want to be like a firefighter or a police officer, somebody like that. I was always really drawn towards, like, obviously motors, like tractors and airplanes. So whether it was a guy operating a bulldozer or flying an airplane, maybe some kind of mixture of both, that's where I had my heart set until I found racing.
You know, I can kind of picture you in a flying bulldozer, so that could be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, never say never.
Question number three, and I know this, but most of the people don't know this. Do you have brothers and sisters? And if yes, how many are there, and where are you in the mix?
I do. I'm the oldest of three. So my sister, she is 21. My brother's 18 now. They're not big fans of racing, so you probably won't see them at the racetrack, but... that's how my family works out.
All right. Question number four. What's your go-to order at your favorite restaurant?
Go-to order would be probably a really good Italian bolognese. I love pasta, but I love, like, quality pasta. And I love Italian food, so that's probably my go-to.
Okay. Question number five. What do you wish you knew that you know now when you started racing? So when you first started out, what do you wish you knew?
I wish I knew that racing was way harder than it looked off the racetrack. I love the stuff that happens on the racetrack, but some of the stuff behind the scenes in order to get there has been very tough to learn along the way, and I wish I'd known the ups and downs a lot sooner.
Okay, question number six. What's something you failed at?
Something I failed at would be probably being a very good student in school. Like many other race car drivers, I have terrible ADD, so when it wasn't something I was interested in, my attention was completely out the window. So I won't say that my entire school career was a failure, but I think it was a failure.
Well, you're so driven with what you do and so attentive to everything in racing that I can see why, you know, your ADD or like most race car drivers, ADD kicks in. And if you're not interested in, why pay attention? I totally get that.
Yep.
Question number seven. If you could choose walk-up music like in baseball, you know, the guys walk up to the bat at a professional game, they have theme music. What song would be your pick for your walk-up music?
Oh, man, I think this depends on what racetrack we're competing at. Because if it's Bristol, first of all, you have to have some epic walk-up music. So, like, some, I don't know, Iron Maiden or some Metallica, something like that, to really get everybody's blood going.
Okay, so at Bristol's this weekend, so you would have, I could see you having Enter the Sandman from Metallica going for that, but what about the following weekend at Road America, what would you have?
Oh man, Road America, I don't know, maybe some relaxing music, something with a good beat, but not too crazy, I don't have anything that I could say right now, but, you know, it's a road race. You got to be calm. You got to be selected, smart about. So something that gets me in the right mindset, I guess. But Bristol, you got to just get pumped up for that, because that is one gnarly short track.
Very good. Question number 8. What do you do on a normal non-race weekend?
Normal non-race weekend, I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, so try to hit the lake with my buddies during the summertime. Otherwise, we're probably going to go for a motorflex to beat and bang with each other on the go-kart track. Otherwise, maybe just hanging out and thinking about going racing.
All right, question number 9. What's your favorite book?
Favorite book? I'd be lying if I told you I read a lot of books. So, I'm not sure, really. Maybe a book that I've been fond of is The Old Man and the Sea. That's one I've read once or twice. My dad has been the one that pushed me to read that, and I think it's not only a great story, but teaches you a lot of life lessons.
Yeah, your dad's a big fisherman, so he...
Yeah.
I could see him telling you to read that book for sure.
That helps, for sure. It's definitely a big reason why he pushed it on me.
Question number 10. When you are alone in your car, are you singing along with the music?
Most of the time, yes.
If there's anybody else in the car, are you singing along with the music?
No, probably not. Doesn't fit my brand, I guess.
All right. Will, really appreciate you taking part in the TC America Podcast 10 Questions.
Cool. Thanks a lot. Hope I answered them with the best.
There's no wrong answers, believe me.
Yeah, anyway, I hope it was entertaining.
Thanks, Will. Corksport Performance is your Mazdaholic stop for performance parts. Since 1998, Corksport has been giving love to all the ignored Mazda models which everyone drives. 20 years later, Corksport is a leader in manufacturing a full range of performance parts for the Mazda Speed 3, the Mazda 3, the ND MX-5, and more. We have real people that will take your phone call. None of that email-only BS from online-only stores or a store being run out of their mom's basement in Detroit by a guy named Chuck. Corksport supports simple bolt-on mods, giving you guidance and advice to build your Mazda Speed 3 to over 600 horsepower and be a terror on the track.
This is where touring car racing comes to life. We're back. We're back to the Touring Car America Podcast with Joe Jordan.
Welcome back to the TC America Podcast. We're going inside the series with the SRO Touring Car Manager, Jim Jordan. Jim, it's been a few weeks. You're back from your Belgium 24-hour trip, the total 24-hour race, and gearing up for Watkins Glen in a few weeks. How's it going and what's going on in the series?
It's gone great. Just getting back into the regular routine after the trip to Europe, which is, it's always interesting and fun to see just the entire organization at work. It's such a big event that people just it should be on everyone's bucket list, because you know you look at the classic road racing events. And, you know, those being things like Le Mans and the Tour de France, Daytona and Spring, and those races are all fantastic, but for the most part, they're multi-class races. What's special about the 24-hour spy, all a single class. So we had 72 GT3 cars racing at Spa, and just amazing, just absolutely amazing. So, a fun trip, somewhat successful from my perspective. Had meetings, of course, with the top people from the SRO. Had my meetings with Stefan Mattel and Patricia and the main management team there. Greg Gill and I present our kind of for both short-term and long-term, making sure that they understand what our plans are, and all that went well. So now I'm back into trying to get the schedule finalized for 2020, and also figuring out what I could present to the teams at Watkins Glen. The other big thing that happens is some meetings with manufacturers, getting caught up there, and also just had some interesting meetings with some of the other local organizations from around the world that promote various SRO races. So it was good. A lot of learning, a lot of meetings, and feel like we have a pretty good direction we're on for the next few years in FTC America. So a good trip. Yep. Now it's just putting the schedule together.
And at Watkins Glen, you put out a letter this morning that you're going to have the State of the Touring Car meeting at Watkins Glen. So that'll be exciting for everyone to hear. I'm sure you're working on that diligently.
Yeah, one of the first things I did when Greg Gill got talked into hiring me in 2016 was to put together a document kind of spelling out where I thought the series should go and the direction we were going to go, and kind of laid it out over a 2 to 3 year span, because for both the teams and our manufacturing partners, they're all dealing with long-term capital investment. So they need to know and have some idea of the direction you're going, because that allows them to make the long-term plans, which you hope will align with your long-term plans. And you can end up with just a stronger series for everybody. And so in 2016, for the first time, I kind of presented the plan where I thought we're going, and I've done that every year. So for the meeting at Watkins Glen, we'll talk to the competitors, and we'll basically kind of lay out where we see the series being in 2020, 2021, and a sneak peek at where we think long-term things are going. So, again, the further out you tell manufacturers and teams the directions you're going, they may not always like it, and honestly, some of them may decide that they no longer fit in the direction we're going, and I always respect that. But so far, we've been pretty good at attracting more people to the series and have decided it doesn't fit anymore. And I know the manufacturers in particular just really appreciate knowing the direction of the series. And they, when they're investing money, it helps everybody.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. And to at least discuss it and tell people where you're headed. And I'm sure, some people will not agree, of course, and they may go in a different direction, and that's their prerogative. But I do know that a lot of the things that you said in 2016, here we are in 2019, and they're pretty much right on what you said was going to happen. So I don't think that everything comes true, but the general direction is still the same. And it allows people to plan and to use those capital expenditures the right way. So I think it's a great thing that you do, and I'm sure I will sit in on it as well, try to learn with the teams about the future. So that's a good deal, and I look forward to that. Also,
Joe, if you could figure out the technology, maybe you could mic me up for that event, and you could have a podcast of just that discussion. I'm challenging you to come up with a way to do it.
I can do it. I already know how to do it, so that's an easy one, Jim. Thanks.
Sure.
It's a great idea. And yes, it'll be easy to do.
Yep. The biggest challenge you're going to have, Joe, is session and answer first. So,
yes, that would be tough.
As much as I like to talk.
And you like to hear yourself talk, too, by the way.
Exactly. I enjoy listening to myself on the DC America podcast. but the questions from the teams are always pretty insightful, so you can tell where their heads are at. And so anyway, we could figure out that part of the good. If not, then we could just listen to how great I think I am. So.
Also, I know that the season-ending banquet in Vegas was a topic in your letter this morning. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
What's happening this year is the Las Vegas, a new event, a new track that we're all going to. And what's going to be fun about the whole thing is the entire SRO international banquet's going to be at Las Vegas. So it's not just U.S. arm, so it's not just the U.S. Rural America stuff. It's actually every racing series that the SRO is involved with, short of the Intercontinental Challenge, because that race won't quite, or that series won't quite be over yet. But every other series is going to be represented there, from the British GT to the GT3 series in Asia, and of course the U.S. series. So there'll be people from all over the world coming to Las Vegas, and although I haven't been to the SRO award banquets before, I know they're just spectacular, and I know it's a good function when they're very focused on what the after party's going to be like. So I'm really not quite used to so much planning for the after party, but that's a big topic of conversation between Robbie Montanola, who's kind of plunked on this banquet, at least from our management team. Just figuring out what club we're going to have the after party at. So it's going to be amazing. I'm also trying to warn our teams that it's going to be black tie, and that's going to be, I think the wives and girlfriends and women drivers are all going to love that. I know some of the crew guys, some of the team members are not really excited about black tie, but I was sort of thinking early on that a bright blue ruffled tuxedo would be the way for me to go. I'm not sure. Maybe the last banquet I attend at the SRO will be that bright blue Elvis looking tuxedo. I think discretion may be the better part of valor this year.
And do you know if the touring car banquet's going to be on what day?
Yeah, everything, the banquets are all going to be on Sunday, so we're going to try to get done with the touring car stuff early. They're still working out exactly how that's all going to function with all the various championships, but it's, whatever it is, it's going to be fun, and it's going to be one of these things I think people talk about for a long time.
Yeah, I just want to make sure if people start buying tickets to airline tickets to go to Vegas that they at least have an idea, a little bit, of when they should be leaving.
Well, I guess my recommendation is going to be don't plan to fly out till at least Monday afternoon.
Yeah.
Because I think the after party scheduled to run to 3 a.m. or something insane. So, anyway, it's going to be a blowout. It's going to be really fun, and definitely looking forward to it.
And also, if you're one of the teams that's going to Watkins Glen and you haven't entered yet, the entry deadline is tomorrow, Friday. We're actually discussing this on Wednesday, and the show will be out on Thursday. So make sure you get your entry in on Friday. Otherwise, you'll be have a late fee.
Yeah, exactly. It's become quite a hardship for our paddock people, with people deciding to enter at the end, and so we're going to be draconian this time. And again, Stacy sent out a reminder, I sent out a reminder, I'll probably send out one more reminder Friday morning, and I guess so far what I've seen, the good news is it's forcing people to make decisions early. There's a couple of folks that have just decided they don't feel comfortable, they're prepared enough to come to Watkins, so they told me today they're not coming. Still expecting a really good grid, maybe the biggest grid since COTA, but it's better just to know what you're dealing with and not trying to shoehorn something into the paddock at the end of the game. So so if you're listening to this on Thursday, you have a day. If you're listening to this Friday, the 16th, get your entry in today. And if you're listening to it after that, you're going to end up being a late fee.
So, Jim, is there anything else you want to talk about before we sign out for Inside the Series?
Nope, just excited for the last few races of the year. I think we're going to see last I knew, we will see the new DC class Sunday, at least on the first. They best say that's the likelihood. Another one of the cars that was supposed to come, a new model. They informed me today that they have decided the car's not quite ready to show yet. So we'll hope it makes it to Road America. And we may have two new DC cars at Road America. And supposedly we're on track for the new model in GCA at Las Vegas. Saw pictures of the progress of that car just yesterday. So a lot of good stuff coming. Never fast, we hope, but everything is still coming. So look forward to doing better things.
That's great. Appreciate your time, Jim, and thanks for doing Inside the Series for the Touring Car America podcast.
Thanks, Joe.
Hi, my name is Corksport. And I'm a functioning Mazdaholic. It started in the golden dot-com days, slinging parts across seas, you know, hanging out in the garage. But one thing led to another, and we kept saying, this could be better if we did this. That's how it always starts, with one small thing needs to be fixed, with something that could always be better in one way or another. The next thing I knew, I was singing Go Fast Mazda bits left and right, and somewhere along the way ended up with race cars hanging out in my garage. Now it's time to take those cars out of the garage and get back in the game. We'll see you at the track. Love, Corksport.
This is where touring car racing comes to life. We're back. We're back to the Touring Car America podcast with Joe Jordan.
This is a TC America podcast, and I'm here with Cole Cirillo, who drives the number 25 Honda Civic Si for X Factor Racing. And thanks for joining me, Cole. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I know you're, you know, an experienced veteran. You're an old man of, how old are you again?
17
years old. So it's pretty amazing to talk to a young man who's just getting going in his racing career. So you're 17 years old. You live in Scottsdale, Arizona. Are you going to be a senior this year in high school?
Yeah, I am.
And
next week.
Oh, you start school next week. And I know that you're not going to be at Watkins Glen because of New York State rules. Yeah, that's a bummer. But we'll look forward to just seeing you at Road America and in Vegas. So,
yeah.
So as a senior in high school, what do the other kids think about you racing? Do you talk about it much, or are you pretty quiet about it?
Yeah, I usually tell a lot of people that I meet. A lot of people already know about it and stuff, a lot of my teachers and stuff, but it's kind of a lot of people really think it's cool, but like some people just like don't really think it's that cool. Some people don't understand really what racing is, and they just think it's like, from their view, they think it's just like going in circles, turning the wheel left.
Right. The NASCAR mentality. Yeah,
they don't understand what it's really.
Yeah. And, you know, I had a son and daughter that both raced as well, and my son got tired of talking to people about it because they just didn't understand. So he stopped telling people after a while. And if they found out, fine, he'd explain it. But he got kind of tired of the whole trying to explain it when they just didn't get it. So I understand what you're saying. So, Cole, you're an only child. I know that much. And you were born and raised in Scottsdale?
Correct.
And I think when you were a kid, you got involved in racing with go-karts at like 9, but before that age, were you just hang out with your dad around cars, or how did you get involved with cars or karts or any of that?
So, neither my parents or family has ever done anything with racing, and I just kind of grew up with my mom and dad always having like racing on the TV, watching NASCAR and Formula One and all that fun stuff. And I think I went to like Octane Raceway, which is like an indoor go-karting place one time. And I was like, oh my gosh, that was so fun. And I kind of want to do like something faster and stuff like that. And then we like rented a kart, and then I just like kind of went from there.
So was your parents, were they kart people? I guess if they watched racing on TV, they always had interest in it. So by taking you to that go-kart track, that's kind of how you fell into it, and you pushed to do something more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty, you know, for a young kid like that, you're probably, what, 7, 8, 9 years old, something like that, to push their parents to go faster. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so you started go-kart racing, and talk a little bit about that, what the first year or so was like in go-kart racing.
Yeah, so I was just doing club racing for a while with, like, like 5, 6 kids, like, my age, in the Rotax Minimax class. And I started with an Aero Tasty, which I remember. And I was kind of in the back, but I was getting better and better and learning a lot. And then I think it was like 5th race or something. I got in a big crash. I got knocked out, unconscious.
Oh.
And I go to like the ER and stuff. And that was kind of like a little pause, but like we went right back. I got right back into it after that.
How did your mom and dad react to you having a crash and where you got knocked unconscious when you're just a kid?
Yeah, my mom was freaking out.
Yeah.
Both my parents were, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's hard being a parent watching your kid race because you want them to do well, but you think about safety all the time. And for me,
my mom's like,
What was your mom like? What did she think?
I was just saying, like, she's like my number one supporter. She's always like in the grandstands, like screaming my name and stuff.
That's great. And so you had an accident. Was that with your own cart? That was with your own cart? That wasn't
our own cart, yes.
And so you fixed it and decided to get back on the horse. And do you remember that? Was it hard to get going?
From what I remember, I don't think so. Like, I remember, like, I got a new chassis after that. And then I started racing with this, like, new coach. His name's Christian Bird. And I just remember, I just get more competitive after that, more aggressive.
Right. Because you think that's because of the coaching, or do you think it was so you had some knowledge helping you, or do you think it's just you're getting older and more experienced?
Yeah, knowledge was a big key. Like, before, I didn't know. Neither my dad and I did not know a lot about what we were doing before.
Right. So Christian was able to kind of give you the confidence to know what's going on. That's cool. And he's still with you to this day, right? So he started with you when you were...
No.
Oh, it's a different guy now?
Yeah, I was with this one guy for like a year.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm with Clay Snow.
Clay Snow.
For five, 6 years, yeah.
I got it now. So how many years did you do the go-karts for?
Four. 3.5,
mm-hmm.
something like that.
And how do you, I know you did the Teen Mazda Challenge stuff, so how did that come about? Like, what made you go that route?
So, I was, like, on the last year of, like I said, go-karting, and we were doing, like, all of, like, the big national races, like Challenge of the Americas, U.S. Open karting.
Right.
And we were in Sonoma racing at the go-kart track. And then my coach, Clayton, an old kid used to work with go-karting, was, like, down at the big track racing Miatas. And I went down there, and we checked it out. And my dad and I really liked it, and so did my coach. And we took it as, like, a consideration to get into that, maybe.
Right.
And then I think a couple races after that, I got in, like, another big crash.
Right.
Scusa race in the junior class. I was gonna big pile up and totally like messed up the cart, and then my dad's like, "All right, we're getting in the cars."
Yeah, with age comes a cage. Kind of what the motocross guys say too.
I think I was 14 at the time.
Yeah, so you transitioned over to, did you guys build a spec Miata? Did you buy one? What'd you do?
No, my coach knew someone that builds them, and we bought one off of him.
And
it was a 91 Miata, and then we wrapped it like red, white, and blue, something like that. It was cool, and that was just like my beginner car.
Right. And did you have to, at 14 years old, even though you had karting experience, I don't think they give you a license right away, right? You had to kind of...
Yeah, that was a big, long story. So, first of all, I don't even know how to drive manual.
Right.
And they kind of just, like, my parents just, like, threw me on the track with the manual, and I kind of just figured it out on my own.
You didn't watch a YouTube video?
Oh, yeah, I did.
That's
like that.
Yeah, I know a lot of kids, that's how they learn to drive a stick, is watching a YouTube video.
That's how I learned how to heel toe.
I like it.
Yeah.
So, but,
I had to go through like a whole series of HPDEs, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then I had to do 3 races without any contact or going off track. And then I had to take... like a written visual test and stuff like that.
And this was all with NASA, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what was that like going through the HPD stuff when you were the, you know, you were probably one of the only ones that didn't have even a license to drive on the street?
I got a hang of it really fast, and I just wanted to keep going faster and faster, like, because it was like such at a slow pace. But, like, my coach was, like, in my ears because we had the radio, and he was just always telling me, like, oh, take that line or go faster there, because I knew they were looking at me, so I just wanted to get through this so I can get into actually racing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of went through all those 1 through 4 HPD, right? You go through all those, or maybe it's just 3, and then they allow you to go for your license. And you're moving up. Like,
yeah.
The HPD1 is very basic, slower, you know, very restricted passing. And each level you go up, they allow you to pass more and to do more things and that kind of stuff. And
yeah, exactly.
I'm sure with your karting background, you were kind of bumping up against the edge of HPD 1 and 2 and probably 3 as well. So you were just ready to go. So you're just trying not to make any mistakes so that they don't allow you to move up. What kind of process was that? How long did it take to go from HPD 1 to getting a license?
It took a long time.
I mean, do you think it was...
Maybe half a year.
Yeah. Yeah, so to a young guy, that's a long time. To an old guy, that's not much time at all. So it's all perspective. So it was six months of a nightmare of driving, being limited on where you can pass and how fast you can go, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in between those race weekends of like just testing and stuff, I'd also go to like other tracks like Thunder Hill. And I'd race with, like, these organizations, like, Hooked on Driving and all that other stuff.
Right.
And we used to have to say I was 16 to be able to race.
Yeah.
When I was 14. And just, like, we were just trying to get as much seat time for me as possible in the car. And we did skid pad days and stuff like that. It was fun. But,
So you had to... be a little bit liberal with your age when you're talking to people. I like that. It seems like that's a common thread with people I talk to. You know, Victor Gonzalez actually forged a birth certificate so he could race at a younger age. Now he's an older guy. So back then you couldn't race till you were 18. And he was like you. Or
yeah, I need that.
yeah. So he, I understand how that is and what, you know, you don't want to cause problems. But if you guys know that you're ready to do certain things, you're ready and no one can deny you. And it takes that drive to push forward, kind of like most racers have. They're going to figure out a way to get it done and to do it.
Yeah.
So you had that, the NA Miata, which is the first generation Miata, and you ran, so you got through all the HPDE with NASA, and you were trying to get as much track time as you could, and then, so what was the first race?
I want to say it was in the rain, and I did really good. It was just so long, I forgot.
So,
but I remember it was like in the rain. One of the first races was in the rain.
So you were like, probably like 14 and a half or 15 years old at this point.
Yeah. And then I just like, I did really good in the rain. I was like, oh, wow, I'm pretty good in the rain, you know.
Now, was it in Northern California or was it in Arizona?
Yeah, so Sonoma Raceway kind of became my home track.
And
we never raced in Arizona because of like there's not really any competition or not a lot of like there are tracks, but there's just like not really anything for me.
Right. I mean, there's tracks are being developed there now all the time. It seems like they have a new track opening, but a few years ago there wasn't that many, and there was a threat of Wild Horse being closed down and all sorts of other stuff. So I get it. I get why you're even though you're out of Phoenix, I mean Scottsdale, you race mostly out of Northern California, so Sonoma, Thunderhill, Lagunas, WeatherTech Raceway,
Button Willow,
yeah. So I get that. So your first race in the rain was that at Sonoma?
Yeah.
And usually they have 40 or 50 car fields, so.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I had to start in it. I'm glad I did because, like, it's, like, bumper to bumper, just, like, pure racing.
Yeah, always amazing. Someone to run with, always close competitive racing, no matter where you are in the field. So it sounds like you did well in the rain, but were you, in qualifying, where were you in, a 50-car field in your first race? Just take a guess as to where you qualified.
I think it was maybe like top 10 or 10th.
Wow. That's incredible. So that's pretty shocking to me. Most of the time, people who just get into spec Miata.
I don't think it was like one of my, I think it was one of my first races, but not the first.
I got you.
But it was definitely all that seat time and just like skid pad days, learning how to control the car. That's like one thing I kind of struggled on. Getting into the Miatas, controlling the slide.
Right. Yeah, I get that totally. So you then, that wasn't a Teen Mazda Challenge race, right? That was just a spec Miata race. Is that correct? Or was that a...
Yeah, I didn't get into Teen Mazda until a couple of years.
Uh-huh. So you just ran the local NASA events before you got into the Teen Mazda Challenge.
Yeah, and then, so with the Miatas, they have like, the 91 and then and they go all the way up to like 02.
Actually 05, yeah. So they have NA, which is 05. The 1.6s.
Yeah.
And then they have the NA8. Oh, I'll explain it. NA8 is 1.8s with the pop up headlights. And then you have the NB, which is the first one without the pop up headlights. And 99 to 2000. And then you have the NB2, which has the VVT engine. And that goes from 2001 to 2005. So, yeah, you were probably in a car that wasn't super competitive, but they do well at Sonoma. And
that was kind of a big issue for a while with my 91. So we sold it and we got a 99. And the 99 just kept having a lot of like motor issues and diff issues and stuff. I think I went through like maybe two, three engines in that car.
Mm.
And then we got a 01, which was an amazing car. Yeah, that was very competitive. And that's like, other than the T Mazda, I think in the 99. That was fun too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you moved into the Teen Mazda Challenge, which is very competitive because people are trying to win a chance to run in the the Mazda Shootout. So you ran in, who were your main competitors in Teen Mazda Challenge when you ran?
Roy Fulmer, Nick Summers, which Nick Summers was like winning every single race in the Miata. And then this kid named Tomas.
Yep.
And then Justin Casey, who I think he was like, I think the Team Mazda went all the way up to like 22 or something like that.
Yeah, it does. It goes from 14 to 22. Yeah,
he's not in it anymore, but he was one of my competitors.
Yeah. So you ran that for a while, and how did you do in the Teen Mazda Challenge?
I was doing pretty good. I wasn't in first or anything, maybe third.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Nick Summers and his dad had a really fast car, and they worked really hard at it. And I remember when they first came out to Teen Mazda Challenge, because we kind of took them under our wing and helped them kind of understand how to do it. And that's the nice thing about that whole Teen Mazda Challenge program is you have people who are aging out like we were, and like Justin Casey, as you talked about, and they're more than willing to work with younger drivers. And I remember, you know, Fulmer, who's now winning a lot of races
at Sonoma. I've been watching him.
Yeah, he's been winning a ton of races up in Northern California. I remember when he first came out and he looked like he was about 10. He was really young looking.
I think he got into the Miatas before me, 12, something like that.
Yeah, he started super young, and he was really quiet, and you know, it's been fun to watch him. We helped him a little bit, too, not as much as Nick, but that's a fun program to see people develop. And how did you get to know Chris Haldeman? I mean, you were running in Northern California mostly, so how did that whole thing happen with Chris? And just so everyone, Chris Haldeman is the owner of X Factor Racing. He preps the cars and things like that at the track. A lot of the Honda Civic SIs, including Cole's car. So that's why I'm asking how he met Chris Haldeman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we heard about the X Factor Racing cars. I think on my last year of the Autos. I don't know, maybe one of my last seasons. And I think we wanted a new engine builder because ours was just not good enough for us. And then we heard of X Factor and how good they were. So we started getting our engines from X Factor. And then we were using their engines for a while. And then I think in Sonoma is when I first met them, the people from X Factor. And it was one of the big championship races in Sonoma. Or no, we were practicing for the championship race in Sonoma. And then I kind of joined their... They didn't keep my car down in Texas.
Right.
Kept in Sacramento. But yeah, it was fun getting to know all of them and Chris and Steve and Drew. And we went to a big race in Texas with the Miatas. I guess, let me see what the race is called. I think it's the Western Championship.
Yeah,
race.
For NASA, yep.
Yeah, that was it. Mm-hmm. And
that was the one they were putting up 60 grand to win or something like that, I think.
Oh, yeah, the one Chris won.
Yeah.
And Chris and my coach Clayton were talking about moving up to a different class besides Miatas. And then I think at that time we heard about how Honda kind of wants younger drivers, and they want more drivers for their car. And Tom O'Gorman, who was the two years in a row champion.
Yep.
Is that right?
He was either one or two, but he ran the SI for a couple years and did very well.
Yeah, he helped promote them, I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
And so we got more into that. And then we ended up moving up to that, and so did Chris. And Chris got a whole bunch of the Hondas.
So does your car, do you guys get the car to the track yourselves, or does he take care of that for you as well? Does the car live in Texas, or does it live out west somewhere?
Yeah, for the first couple races, it wasn't in Texas for Austin and CIR. But we just have the car up in Sacramento with my coach right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just like to do our own thing, like on the weekends and night tests and stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. Might as well.
And
I mean,
we're like this weekend. I'm going up to Thunder Hill for a NASA event, racing like the time trials just for fun.
Right.
In my Honda, and then we're going to Road America in a month to practice. So we're going to pull the trailer up there and then probably leave it up there.
Right.
Till the next race in September.
So. You raced Miatas for about 4 years, it sounds like, 3 or 4 years, and jumped into the Civic. Your first time driving a front-wheel drive car, racing-wise. I think the Subaru is probably four-wheel drive, right?
That was getting in, like, I've never been in another car besides the Miata. I was just always in different Miatas and stuff. I never really got into anything faster or front-wheel drive-wise. So when I, like, first got in the car, it was kind of a lot higher than the Miata, because the Miata, you just sit so low in there,
right?
So small, and it's so weird having such a bigger car, and the it feels so open in the cockpit.
Yeah, there's a lot of room in there compared to a Miata for sure.
And how it's brand new, with the push to start and the 6-speed, and I instantly liked it, and I actually got a hang of it, and it was really cool, like, learning how you use the front-wheel drive and, like, correcting and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you know, as I tell people, when they go from either front-wheel drive to a Miata or from a Miata to front-wheel drive, front-wheel drive, you can pretty much manhandle. I mean, you can really, really throw the car around. You really have to, you know, you kind of fight the car a little bit.
You can get it, like, completely sideways and not really spin out.
Yeah, yeah. So that transition and then if you get back in the Miata, it feels like you're teetotaling, because you can be really aggressive with front-wheel drive. And on Miata, you're trying not to scrub speed. So.
Yeah, you have to, like, feather it sometimes on the Miata, but in the Honda, you're just, like, more gas.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like you took to it pretty quick. And you've been running. We're a little bit past halfway now. Has it turned out the way you thought it would? I mean, what were your expectations coming into this year?
I didn't know. Like, I knew it was like pro, but I never knew how like professional and like how well like everything is there at SRO and like all the interviews and all the fans. It was kind of overwhelming at first. I was kind of like, oh my gosh, like, literally fans. And I had all these people coming up to me and talking to me. And I was like, oh, and like taking photos with me.
And wanting your autograph, right?
Yeah. That was a big surprise. And then I love all these interviews. It's really awesome. Getting my name out there, I love it.
So when you showed up, you weren't necessarily expecting there to be as much exposure as there is.
Yeah.
And you weren't expecting, there's some things, procedural things that you have to do as a professional that you don't have to do as someone running like club racing, you know, like all the checks and all the different things and all the tech.
Yeah, the weigh-in was new to me and all the sight tests.
And I hope that they've taught you to put rocks in your pockets when you weigh in, right?
No.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's the right answer. You're supposed to say, no, I don't know anything about that whatsoever. So you've had a pretty good season. I don't think you haven't
been all right.
You haven't gotten on the box yet, meaning a podium, but you finished fourth a couple times, right?
Yeah, I was really close to third last race. I was in third in the restart. And then I just, I locked it up in the first corner, and I, like, jumped it. There's, like, a photo of me jumping the curb that I got sent on Instagram from that start.
Yeah, well, hey, at least you're an Instagram star now with your car on two wheels, right?
Oh, no, it was on four.
Oh, four all four off. I didn't see that one. I thought it was only two. That's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, I can DM you it. Yeah, but, yeah, I lost a lot of positions because of that lockup. I just went too deep in, and I was trying to hold off Max on my right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so Max is running as well in the series, and he's 14 or 15, mm-hmm. I think, something like that. So
yeah.
You have some other young people who are running in the series and doing well like you are. Were you surprised that there are other young people like you? Or
Yeah, I'm surprised how young Max is. And I heard he races, like, last year I heard he raced, like, 90 weekends.
Yeah. Yeah, he's
like a big amount.
Yeah, he's run a ton and a bunch of different things, and
mm-hmm.
I think it's actually maybe easier to transition from go karts to a Miata than maybe transitioning from a Miata to a front wheel drive car. But he's had a good season, but I've been impressed.
Yeah, the MX5 car is doing pretty good.
Yeah, but I've been impressed by what you've been able to accomplish, and I think you're just going to continue to get better and continue to improve. You're going to a lot of tracks you haven't been to before as well.
Oh yes, that's another thing that I love that I'm liking about this season is all the new tracks, just from like racing on like the video games. And then going to the actual track and realize it's pretty cool. Like VIR was an amazing track. I love that track.
So you go on to iRacing or something like that and try to get as many laps in as you can before the race weekend. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's good.
iRacing.
Yeah. I mean, right now, I think you're seventh in points, and I know it's going to suffer a little bit because you're not going to be there for Watkins Glen, but do you have goals for the rest of the year? What are your goals for the remainder of the season?
To get a podium.
Get a podium, good.
My main goal, yeah. And just try to, like, get on more, like, TV and interviews.
Sure. Absolutely. Just develop your brand, right?
Because in the beginning, like, I'm, like, not really that, well, just in general, I'm not that type of person to, like, talk in front of, like, a camera or be interviewed. But I've been getting a lot better at it, I can tell.
Well, yeah, I think, and also having a teammate like Sally McNulty, who's really good at that stuff, I'm sure she's willing to help and teach you. I see you guys in Instagrams together, so that's really cool.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, she's helped a lot. Her and I do, like, Instagram stories sometimes. And, yeah, she's been a great help.
Yeah, so that's cool. And that's all part of it, right? So you now have the understanding of what it's like to race at a professional level. Now you can start working on the other things to make your brand, your personal brand, better. And where do you see yourself next year?
Next year, hopefully I get a sponsorship with someone and try to get into TCR.
Uh-huh. So you're not going
to... Maybe try a different manufacturer in TCA.
Uh-huh. So you're kind of just trying to figure out where you're going to go next year. You'd like to stay in the series if you can. And either TCR is always a good way to go. I did notice you mentioned Tom O'Gorman, and I know that today he's driving a GT3 NSX in a test session.
Oh, really?
So Honda's got a great program to help develop young drivers, and they, if you stay with the brand, they tend to try to fit you into the future if you can show them what you're worth. So I think
possibly like a Honda TCR.
Sure.
And so IMSA looks really nice. I see a lot of young drivers in the IMSA.
Yeah, and it's a different type of program because you have to share a car and those kind of things in IMSA. But yeah, that's a way that you could go as well. So
yeah,
that's cool. I've enjoyed watching you develop, and I think you've got you're going to be able to hit your goal this year by getting on the podium. I think you're very, very close to that. I mean, I think you were going to be on the podium a couple times, but had a couple mistakes, and that's part of the learning process. So I think you can hit your goal. And again, we're sorry we're going to miss you at the Glen, out of your control.
Yeah.
But Road America, if you've never been there, it's a beautiful place. Look forward to that. And, you know, Vegas is going to be interesting because it hasn't been raced on. The road course hasn't been raced on in a long time. And no one's going to have an advantage, right? Almost everybody in the field, I don't think there's going to be anyone who's driven on that track before. So if you're quick at learning tracks, you're going to be in a good position there.
But do you know why?
Why they haven't raced here? Yeah, because I think one of the last races I was actually in, and believe it or not, is before I ate someone. So it was like the late 90s. I ran in an IMSA race there finished second, actually. But since then, they haven't put on that many road course events. So they focused on just NASCAR ovals and that kind of thing. And they have a road course that's outside of the oval that they run for certain things, but not the inside roval part of the track. So they just haven't focused on it.
Yeah, I'm excited about that, yeah.
Yeah, so
it's going to be fun.
If, you know, being young and being able to learn new tracks, you've done it all year, could be a little bit of advantage to you. No one's going to have the advantage, and it isn't on any of the simulators. So you're going to have to show up cold and give it your best shot.
Yeah, I've done the Fontana of roval before, which gives me an idea of, like, what a roval is in road racing. It's pretty fast.
Yeah, it's cool. But really appreciate your time and really enjoyed getting to know you more, Cole. Do you have any partners you want to talk about before we close out your session? And tell people where they can follow you on social media and things like that as well.
Yeah, you guys can follow me at Cole Corallo Racing on Instagram. And then I have a Facebook too.
And Corallo is spelled...
Cole... C-O-L-E, Corallo, C-I-R-A-U-L-O, and I use Instagram mostly.
Okay.
So that'd be nice to give me a follow.
And you're such a polite young guy, you never corrected me early on in this, so now hopefully I'll get your name correct when I call it on the PA and on Sirius Satellite Radio when I call the races, so I'll do my best to pronounce it correctly from now on.
Oh, yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah, I'm just kind of used to it because that's how everyone pronounces it. I just go with it most of the time.
Yeah, you're just too polite. I'd like to get it right. Say it one more time, Cole. How do you say your last
Corallo.
Name?
Corallo.
Corallo.
Yeah.
Or Corallo. No, I'm just kidding. But Corallo, got it. I will remember that. So, Cole Corallo, really appreciate your time. I've enjoyed getting to know your family a little bit and seeing you at the track. I look forward to seeing you at Road America in the future.
You too.
Thanks a lot, Cole.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Touring Car America podcast, where touring car racing comes to life. Please like, comment, and subscribe to the show. And for more series information, go to the series website at tcamerica.us.